With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Joining us now, number one draft pick overall, 1989, made his major league debut in the regular season finale of that 89 season. You can hear him on 105.7 The Fan in the Orioles Radio Network as he's part of our crew. Let's bring in Ben McDonald. Ben, good morning. Welcome to The Fan with Bob Haney and Tom Davis.
Good morning. Good morning.
All right, Ben, your debut was, what, 89? Last game of the regular season. The Orioles had been eliminated the prior day from pennant contention. Take us back to that day, Frank Robinson, manager.
Yeah, Frank managing, and I remember coming in relief like I did in 89, you know, and I was very fortunate to get to experience, you know, that pennant race as a 21-year-old right out of college and be just a very, very small part of that. But it was a lot of fun for me. We were in Toronto, and I think the game was tied, and I came in and just threw one scoreless inning, and I think the Orioles scored the top of the ninth, and we went on to win the ball game, and I picked up my first major league victory, you know, and like everybody else, I'm just saddened at the news, and Frank was my first manager in the big leagues, obviously, in 89 and 90, of course, part of 91. And, good memories of Frank. You know, Frank was an in-your-face kind of guy, which I appreciated. And, I remember throwing my first bullpen when I first signed with Frank down there in the bullpen in Old Memorial Stadium. And I remember I threw like five or six pitches, and he came up to the mound. He goes, "You can't pitch in the big leagues." He said, you can't pitch here. And I said, "Come on, Skip." I said, "I've thrown six pitches in the bullpen. What do you mean I can't?" He said, "Well, you're tipping your pitches. You know, I mean, you're not going to last up here, you know." So that was my first real experience with Frank, you know. And, of course, we had to make some adjustments. And, you know, that's what baseball's all about is making adjustments, you know. And, Frank, never cared for pitchers a whole lot. We really didn't converse a whole lot. We dealt with the pitching coaches more than we did with Frank. But, he had some words for me from time to time, some encouragement, of course, and some things I needed to do he thought to be successful at the big league level.
Now, one of his great attributes you just brought up was tipping pitches. In other words, he could see that a lot, much more than maybe anybody else in the game. Explain what he told you, about how you were tipping pitches.
Well, he thought when I went to grab my breaking ball versus my fastball, I did a little bit something different in the glove, and he noticed that. And you're right, Tom. He could pick up things like that, and that's what made Frank, I think, such a great ball player and kind of lost in today's game in some ways is that, the hitters really studied the pitchers, and they watched the pitchers because there was no film, as much film back then as there is today. You couldn't break down each at-bat like you used to. So they would get their advantages just by watching a pitcher warm up. They'd watch him in the bullpen. They'd watch him take his warm-up pitches, and they would kind of pick up just one little thing that they did a little bit differently. It would give him an advantage when he stepped in the box. And, of course, Frank was great as that. Cal Ripken Jr. was really good at that, too. And I think he learned a lot of that from Frank Robinson. And so, I had to make some adjustments. And it was good to have him on my side because, you hear about those stories all the time about guys, tipping pitches. And, obviously, when a hitter knows what's coming or have a pretty good idea of what's coming, it makes even that much more difficult to have success.
Being the number one pick in the entire draft, when you get to Baltimore, is there such a thing like – being in awe of Frank Robinson, in other words, like you think he's like somewhere up on a pedestal, or in your mind, you don't have to worry about something like that because you're just trying to prove yourself?
Well, a little bit of both. I didn't know a lot about the history of the Baltimore Orioles. I'll be honest with you. I mean, we didn't even have cable vision until I got into high school down here where I live. And on cable vision, the only thing we ever got was WTBS and WGN. And so I grew up as a National League Braves Cubs type fan, and very rarely other than Monday Night Baseball did you ever see the American League teams and the Baltimore Orioles, and so when I first signed with the Orioles, I did not know a whole lot about the history, but it didn't take long with Jim Palmer around the clubhouse and Brooks Robinson and Frank Robinson managing and Boog Powell coming along, you started to grasp a lot of the history. And I had to do a little bit of research and talk to some people to really figure out. I knew Frank was a great player, I knew he was in the Hall of Fame, but I didn't realize how good he was, the only guy to win the MVP in two different leagues, and of course the Triple Crown in '66. And when he came to the Orioles, he really was that piece of the puzzle that they needed to kind of get them over the top. And, of course, he would be a big part of why they were going to win two World Series when he arrived in Baltimore.
Ben McDonald joining us here, 105.7 The Fan, Bob Haney, Tom Davis, celebrating the life, career, legacy of Frank Robinson. And, Ben, we talk about it. Your debut was in 89. Your first year as a starter was in 1990. And your first start was against the White Sox. What was it, 3-4 hitter?
Shutout
then. Mm-hmm. Just talk about that night and what the Frank said to you in the aftermath of it, because obviously people were banking on you to be the savior of the team at that time.
Yeah, I remember that start like yesterday. I mean, you never forget. You know, there's a few things in baseball you don't ever forget. You know, and the first time you step on the mound, I remember that. Frank brought me in relief of Curt Schilling on an 0-2 count, believe it or not, with one out, runners on first and third, and Corey Schneider stepped to the plate. I threw one pitch. It was a breaking ball, and he grounded out to short, and Junior turned the double play with Billy and over to first base, and that was my first outing. And then you never forget your first start, you know, and that was in 1990, as you mentioned. And I remember Frank just saying, hey, try to go out and relax. Just try to go out and do the things that made you successful to get you here, you know. And you turn around, and a short 2.5 hours later, there's a complete game shutout, you know. And, you know, I remember Frank saying, boy, you made that look easy. But he said, don't expect it to be like that. And I knew better because I didn't know what I was doing just yet. It's just one of those games where, you know, Bob Melvin put all down, you know, all the right fingers in the right places, and I was able to execute some pitches, and we throw a shutout, you know. But always enjoyed Frank. I always liked visiting, you know, with Frank, picking his brain a little bit from time to time. But I was a young guy too, guys, just trying to belong and just trying to be accepted in a lot of different ways, you know. And because of the contract at the time, that was tough for me in those early days just to be accepted. But I think once everybody realized that I was just another guy and just a guy there to be a part of a team and help a team win some ball games, I think everything kind of fell into place. But it took a little time.
Now, Frank was replaced by Johnny Oates, and you were still a player with the Orioles at that point. Tell us about how a player handles that, you know, like a managing switch at that point.
Well, I mean, first of all, you feel bad because it wasn't Frank's fault that we got off to a bad start in 91 and weren't having the success that we wanted to have. And so it always starts at the top, you know. So as a player, you feel some responsibility for that, you know, and you hate to see Frank go under those circumstances, especially what he meant to Baltimore, you know. But having said that, you know, Johnny Oates comes over and we feel like it's almost, you know, a new beginning in a lot of ways, you know, and it's a fresh start and you start moving forward, you know. So it was tough to be, because, you know, as a ball player, I feel that responsibility. And I remember Frank in spring training of 91 saying, you know, in a newspaper that, you know, McDonald had to win 20 this year. If he doesn't win 20, then the Orioles aren't going to be successful. And I'm thinking, man, I'm 22 years old. It seems like a lot of pressure. You know, I was named opening day starter, an oblique injury, I think it was, or something, and it kept me out of the, you know, the lineup in 91 opening day. You know, I'd later come on back and get back into the swing of things, you know. But Frank didn't hold anything back, you know. And I remember, I can tell you another funny story. I introduced myself to him. I said, hey, coach, how you doing? He said, listen, we're not in college anymore, kid. I'm not your coach. I'm your manager, you know. And so, I mean, you know, he was always in my face. And, you know, Frank obviously was old school, you know, and the rookies, you know, weren't treated bad, but they weren't treated the same as the veteran players, obviously, you know. And so you just had to learn and you had to earn your keep with Frank and some of the veteran players. And that was fine. You know, that's just how things were back in the early 90s.
Well, you know, you make a great point there, because I often thought that he would take, say, like the reporters or a player to sort of like the edge just to test them to see if he could mess with them a little bit mind-wise. In other words, like see how they handled, you know, some little bit of adversity or a little bit of kidding or whatever versus, you know, being strictly all positive.
Oh, no, there's no doubt. I mean, Frank, I think, loved to play those mind games. And I think, you know, the best managers or coaches that are out there, even in college ball now, have a way of motivating guys in different ways. And some guys, you know, you got to pat on the butt more than others. Some guys you can really get in their face and you can challenge them. And I think Frank was great at pushing buttons and trying to get the best out of every guy. And I remember he called me to the side one time and he said, listen, he said, I love your stuff. You're going to do well. You know, after some time, he kind of warmed up to me a little bit, but he said, you got to get meaner. You know, you have got to get meaner. And what he meant was, and he finally told me, he said, do you want to be a nice guy or do you want to win games in the big leagues? And I said, Skip, I want to win games in the big leagues. He said, well, then you need to start pitching like that. And what he meant was, you got to start moving some people's feet. I mean, guys are too comfortable for you in the box. And so it's okay to make a guy to throw a ball inside, not trying to hit a guy, but try to move his feet every now and then to make him uncomfortable. You know, and that always stuck with me the rest of my career, is that you know, and y'all know Frank. I mean, Frank had no friends in the other dugout during a ball game. Even when he played, he didn't. And when he managed, he didn't either. And I always carry that over. And, you know, I'm not going to say I had hate, and I'm not going to say Frank had hate toward the other team, but I disliked them during a ball game because I always felt like they were trying to make me look bad. And either they were going to be successful or I was going to be successful. And Frank taught me that when I was 21 or 22 years old, and it really carried throughout. Now, I'd go to dinner with certain guys that I played with in college and that I knew and all that kind of stuff after a ball game. But during a ball game, I had no friends, and I know Frank didn't either.
Ben, I just want to say this in wrapping up. Of all the guys that have been in this town since 54, and I can remember all the way back to then, you're the only person that's been a broadcaster that I've never heard a negative word about in your entire broadcasting career. And I think you do a terrific job, and we appreciate you being with us.
Well, Tom, I appreciate you saying that, man. I look forward. I'm going to see you guys in spring training a little bit coming up this year, and got a few more games I'll do with the Orioles this year. And, man, I'm looking forward to new manager and new GM and a new team and a new start for the Orioles.
Ben McDonald, former Oriole, now part of the radio crew, as you heard, on 105.7 The Fan, the Orioles Radio Network. We are the flagship home. Birds of Baltimore. Ben, we appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Y'all, too. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Ben.
You got it. Ben McDonald.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.